Good afternoon, attendees. We will be beginning the webinar promptly at 2 p.m. So thank you for joining a few minutes early. Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for joining a few minutes early. The webinar will begin promptly at 2 p.m. So stand by. Good afternoon, everybody. I would like to welcome you to this webinar on October 7th, the topic of which is, what is the North American Plant Protection Organization, or NAPO, and why those of you that connected to the webinar should be interested in and want to engage in our activities. I am delighted to see that we had over 240 registered attendees to this webinar. We certainly hope to make it worth your while. Before we begin with the slides, I would like to give a couple of indicators on housekeeping. The first is to let you know that today's webinar is going to be jointly presented by mainly three speakers: myself, Stephanie Bloom, I am the executive director for NAPO; our colleague from the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, Steve Côté, who is a member of the NAPO Advisory and Management Committee, or AMC, and represents Canada on the AMC group. Also, Stephanie Dubon, who works for the United States Department of Agriculture in the Plant Protection and Quarantine section, and she represents the NAPO AMC on behalf of the United States. Together with us this afternoon, we have two members of industry in Canada and in the US, Mr. Andrew Morse and Dr. Rick Dunkel. Andrew works for Flowers Canada Growers, and Rick is a scientific advisor for the American Seed Trade Association. And both of them also participate in the NAPO management team as part of the industry advisory group. So we are all here to hopefully deliver this presentation and be able to answer the questions that you might have. With respect to that, since we have several presenters this afternoon, it would really help us if, as you listen to our presentation, you could write down your question and determine who you'd like to reply to that question. So we have myself, Stephanie B, or old Stephanie, Steve, Stephanie D, or young Stephanie, and then our two industry partners, Andrew or Rick. And you could choose to type your questions in the chat or also in the question and answer icon that Zoom uses. And we will try to answer as many of your questions as we can after we conclude the presentation. Should there be questions that remain unanswered, you can please send them to me at the email shown on this slide, and we will make sure to provide you with an answer. So again, good afternoon, everybody, and thank you very much for attending this webinar. This webinar is to attempt to try to answer some questions that you may have been curious about from time to time. You may have heard about NAPO, but you're not sure exactly what NAPO is and whether there are other similar organizations to NAPO around the world. How long have we been in operation, and what exactly is it that we do? And how and why should you consider getting involved in NAPO? We also will try to answer these questions. If you are an industry representative in today's webinar, you know, where do you fit in NAPO? And why is it important for us to have your input into our activities and the products that we develop? At the same time, why is it important for us to consider the input from industry as well as the input from government? Sometimes those interests are well aligned with each other, and sometimes they are somewhat misaligned. So it's important for us to consider both those viewpoints in NAPO. And finally, we'd like to give you some information on how the interests of industry are communicated to our NAPO management. So let me begin this afternoon by telling you that NAPO, the North American Plant Protection Organization, is the regional plant protection organization, or RPPO, for the North American continent. And we represent the plant health interests of our three member countries, Canada, the United States, and Mexico. But like NAPO, there are other 10 in total, regional plant protection organizations, or RPPOs, around the world. And here I show you their acronyms and their names. In this next slide, you can roughly see where the 10 RPPOs are located, and this gives you a general idea of the countries that are represented by each RPPO. I have to share with you that there is a process going on at the moment where we have an 11th organization that is petitioning to become the 11th RPPO, and that should be determined in the next 2 to 3 months. I also want to share with you that CAFSA, right here, is the newest of the regional plant protection organization. I also want to let you know that even though we are all RPPOs, our structure, the way that we govern ourselves, of course, the number of member countries, our approach to industry partners, and our standard setting activities are all very different. And yet, as RPPOs, we all come together once a year, if we can do it face to face, or 2 to 3 times a year, if we need to do it virtually, to share our experiences at the regional level and see how we can cooperate with one another. So, how is it that regional plant protection organizations came about? Well, if you read the text of the International Plant Protection Convention, regional plant protection organizations are described and their roles are defined in Article 9 of this international treaty. And Article 9 tells us that RPPOs must be recognized by the governing body of the International Plant Protection Convention, and that is the Commission on Phytosanitary Measures. So all 10 of us right now are recognized by CPM, or the Commission on Phytosanitary Measures. Article 9 goes on to say that contracting parties in a region, in NAPO that would be Canada, the US, and Mexico, are called to establish regional plant protection organizations, and that we are responsible for working alongside the Secretariat of the International Plant Protection Convention in helping them achieve the objectives of the IPPC, which is harmonization and cooperation in plant health activities. We are also tasked with gathering and disseminating plant health information, both for our regions and also to share region by region. We are also tasked with cooperating with the IPPC Secretariat in developing, and not only developing, but implementing international standards. So RPPOs stay in communication by attending annual technical consultation meetings. I mentioned this a moment ago. And during these meetings, we encourage interregional cooperation, and we try to promote harmonized measures for preventing and controlling pests. We all know that pests do not respect country borders, and they certainly do not respect regional borders either. So this interregional cooperation is very important. NAPO as an RPPO was established in 1976. And as the RPPO for North America, we have three different levels of functions. We have some regional things that we need to attend to that are specifically issues among our three member countries. We have hemispheric functions, and that is coordinating with the other RPPOs in the American continent. And then finally, we have some global functions. And I will continue on telling you about our regional functions. And then my colleague Steve will tell us a little bit more about hemispheric and global functions. So in terms of the regional functions of NAPO, the most important one is that we provide a forum for public and private sectors in our three member countries to collaborate in the protection of all plant resources, as well as the environment, while also facilitating safe trade. One thing that is unique for NAPO is that we are the only RPPO that encourages, actively encourages, and has industry participation in all its activities. So what do we mean by industry? Well, at the moment, we have forestry and forest products as one of our NAPO stakeholders, seeds, citrus, potatoes, horticulture, fruits and vegetables, rails, broker, grains, and other industry stakeholders. And the wonderful thing about this is that we can harmonize not only at the governmental level, but harmonize and coordinate with the interest of industry, therefore making our RPPO much more effective. And I have to tell you that as executive director of NAPO, I know that the other nine RPPOs are looking for ways to integrate industry into their own RPPOs because they see the success that NAPO has had in this respect. Continuing on with the regional functions, NAPO develops and approves several types of documents, the most important of which are regional standards for phytosanitary measures, or RSPMs. As an organization, we also develop other documents, such as science and technology documents, position, decision, discussion documents, and sometimes protocols for either identification or, say, surveillance for particular pests. The objective of these documents is to provide guidance to our member countries, both government and industry, on harmonized approaches to phytosanitary measures. And by having these documents, we are facilitating the safe movement of plant products, and other regulated articles, not just within our region, but into other regions where we have trading partners. With respect to the NAPO regional standards, they cover a number of different topics, ranging from very basic phytosanitary concepts, such as terminology, and for that we have Regional Standard 5, to specific activities related to accreditation and authorization of phytosanitary services, to overall arching concepts that are important in plant health, such as pest risk management. And for that, we have Regional Standard 40. We also have RSPMs that deal with specific commodities, such as RSPM 3 on potatoes, and RSPM 38 on specific wood products, RSPM 41 on forest products talks about measures that can be integrated into a systems approach for the movement, the safe movement of forest products. We also have RSPMs specifically dedicated to pests of concern to the Napo region, such as RSPM 33 on Asian gypsy moth and RSPM 13 on the pathogen carnal bunt. I have to pause here to remind you that regional standards specifically address issues that are relevant to our member countries, and as such apply only to our member countries. That is to say, they do not replace or override international plant health standards or ISPMs. However, I mentioned science and technology documents and position documents. Those may give guidance in our trade relationship or discussion with trading partners outside of our region. Continuing on with regional functions for Napo, we are the plant health standard setting body for North America. And as such, we provide support to the Sanitary and Phytosanitary Measures Committee of the newly ratified NAFTA 2.0 Free Trade Agreement. As I am sure many of you know, the original NAFTA used to be called that, NAFTA, but the newest agreement that was ratified in July of 2020 has three different names, and you see them right here on this slide. Our colleagues to the north refer to NAFTA 2.0 as the Canada, United States, and Mexico Agreement. Folks in the United States refer to it as the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement. And our colleagues in Mexico refer to it as Tratado entre México, Estados Unidos y Canadá. So for us here in Napo, to keep our sanity, we just call it NAFTA 2.0. Napo also, in addition to developing documents and regional standards, we encourage and facilitate training and capacity development to implement not only our regional standards, but if there is a new international standard that is of interest to our region, we also can develop and deliver training and capacity development events for that standard. We also have a role in assisting the mediation, the presentation, and the discussion of plant health information to help avoid or settle a phytosanitary dispute. This procedure was developed in 2004 here in Napo and has been used a couple of times to avoid a phytosanitary dispute among our member countries. Napo also collects phytosanitary information, and we report back to our member countries on issues that are relevant to them. So for example, if we find out from another RPPO that there is a pest in their region that we deem is important for Napo, we will inform our three member countries of this fact. And finally, Napo supports our IPPC pest reporting obligations. So as contracting parties to the International Plant Protection Convention, our three countries need to report, make official pest reports at the international level. And Napo facilitates that through a system that is called the Phytosanitary Alert System, or PASS. I am not sure if you are aware of PASS, but if you are not, just go to the Napo website, search on the top section of our website and subscribe to the pass so you can receive real-time official pass reports from our three member countries. I am now going to hand over to my colleague, Steve Côté, who will continue on with the presentation. Just tell me when you want me to change a slide, Steve. Take it away.
Thank you, Stephanie. I'll guide you through the next 14 slides. So how our structure and role relates to the accomplishment of our mission. So NAPO promotes transparency, fosters trust, it promotes harmonized approaches and strategic partnerships. It keeps stakeholders informed of its activities, for example, through the annual meeting that it hosts every year, as well as through the distribution of the NAPO newsletter. It's developed products that are implementable and implemented. Stephanie made allusion to some of the workshops that NAPO has organized in the past, and I'll get to that a little bit later. Next slide, please. Stephanie talked about the different functions that NAPO has, whether it be regional, hemispheric, or global. I'll go through some information with regards to NAPO's function at the hemispheric level. So through participation in the Inter-American Coordinating Group in Plant Protection, or HICSPE, which includes the five RPPO, it encourages hemispheric level phytosanitary conversation. It encourages a coordinated approach to plant health issues in the region, and it collaborates to implement the provisions of the IPPC and the international standards for phytosanitary measures. Some of the recent activities that HICSPE has been involved in include eFito, Wang Long Bing, Tuta Absoluta, fruit flies, just to name a few. Next slide, please. Other NAPO global functions: it supports the IPPC Secretariat in the Commission on Phytosanitary Measure, or the governing body of the IPPC, by assisting in the development and implementation of plant health standards. I'll get to that a little bit later as to how certain NAPO standards have served as the basis for international standards. It exchanged technical information with other RPPOs and the IPPC Secretariat concerning all aspects of plant protection. And to that effect, just earlier this week, NAPO was involved in the technical consultation amongst RPPOs to exchange information to that effect. It encouraged its member countries to participate in international activities as well to support plant protection. Next slide, please. Some of the examples of NAPO functions that contribute to global plant health. Stephanie made allusion to that before. So the phytosanitary alert system, which allows Canada, the US, and Mexico to fulfill their pest reporting obligation as per the IPPC or outline in ISPM 13 on guidelines for the notification. Electronic certification expert group promoting eFito amongst our three countries and sharing information on where our three NAPO member countries are with regards to the electronic exchange of phytosanitary certificates. Workshops and training to improve the implementation of key international plant health standards. NAPO organized two workshops on ISPM 15, one in Beijing and one in Costa Rica. Just a few years ago, there was a workshop on ISPM 38 that NAPO organized in collaboration with the AICA. And there's been a series of other NAPO workshops that have also taken place, one on the International Symposium for Risk-Based Sampling in 2017. There was one in 2015 on the Asian Gypsy Moth Program. There was one in 2015 as well on seed workshops. So I think these are just a few examples of some of the workshop and training activities that NAPO has helped organize over the years. And some of the NAPO regional standards that have been developed have also been used for future international standards. Pest-free areas, pest risk analysis, seeds, and wood packaging are just a few examples of these. NAPL had a regional standard before the development of an international standard on wood packaging, or better known as ISPM 15. And the work that NAPL did regionally served as the basis for the development of this international standard. Next slide, please. Some of the historical functions from 1976 to 1995, NAPL and other RPPOs helped to the formation of the IPPC Secretariat, the identification of the most important and pressing international standards that needed development. So there's been over 40 international standards, along with a series of diagnostic protocols and treatment protocols that have been developed over the years, and regional plant protection certainly have helped pave the way for that and identify what are some of the pressing needs along with their member countries and identifying those at the IPPC. And like I alluded to before, we've not only NAPL, but other RPPOs for that matter, have also provided regional standards that they've developed for future international standards to guide the work of the expert groups. Next slide, please. So some of you might ask, how is NAPL structured when it comes to, I guess, making decisions, ensuring that organization is appropriately governed and has sufficient funds to accomplish its mission? Well, there's a few documents that govern the work of NAPL. There's the 1976 ministerial level agreement, letter of agreement that led to the creation of NAPL, the 2004 cooperative agreement, the constitution and bylaws that were revised a few years ago, the 2016-2020 strategic plan that was developed in 2015-16 that kind of paves the way in terms of what are some of the activities that NAPL will be involved in and where it will be focusing its work. And the strategic plan will actually be updated very shortly to reflect or to take into consideration the IPPC strategic framework 2020-2030 that was adopted by the CPM earlier this year, but also to take into consideration other elements that are on the horizon for the three NAPL member countries, as well as foundational documents that talk about processes and procedures, for example, for the development of NAPL standards or science and technology documents. Next slide, please. So NAPL's function and operation are funded through yearly contribution from the three member countries. So the total contribution of the three countries amount to $740,000 US every year, which allows to cover staff salaries, operating and recurring costs, as well as travel expenditures for the secretariat staff. Next slide, please. So who is the NAPL management team? So it composes of the executive committee, the advisory and management committee, and the industry advisory group, as well as the NAPL secretary. Next slide, please. So the executive committee is the head, or its designee, of the NPPO of Canada, Mexico, and the United States. For Canada, that is Greg Wolf, who's the director of the Plant Import Export Division in CFIA's International Affairs Branch. For the United States, that is Osama Alisi and John Greifer. And for Mexico, that is Francisco Ramirez and Ramirez. Next slide, please. The executive committee is there to provide leadership counsel and the strategic direction and planning to the organization. It oversees the activities and performance of the organization. It approves the yearly work program, the annual budget, as well as regional standards and other documents that the expert groups have worked on. And it reports on activities to appropriate authorities and stakeholders within their respective countries. Next slide, please. So the Secretariat is composed of the Executive Director, the capacity of Stephanie Bloom, Technical Director, which is Alonso Suazo, Administrative Officer, Sophia Baez, and the Translator-Interpreter, Nadelka Marine Martinez. The Secretariat is there to provide logistical and technical support to advance the NAPO work program based on the needs and priorities of the three NAPO member countries. And the Secretariat is based in Raleigh, North Carolina. It was previously housed or in Canada, in Ottawa more specifically. Next slide, please. The Advisory and Management Committee, it's 1 to 2 phytosanitary professionals from each of the NPPO, plus the NAPO Executive and Technical Director. The Advisory and Management Committee is there to provide strategic direction and formulate some recommendations to the Executive Committee for consideration. It assists in management and delivery of the work program. It liaises with its Executive Committee members and with the industry. Next slide, please. The Industry Advisor Group is 1 to 2 representatives from each NAPO member country. The IAG representative is selected or appointed by industry, and they're responsible for reaching out to their different industry sectors, thereby facilitating two-way communication on industry concerns and interest with regards to what NAPO should be concerned about or should consider as part of their work program. And it provides input as well into the NAPO strategic direction. The IAG is there to assist in identifying industry experts that participate in NAPO expert groups. Next slide, please. So the NAPO management team meetings occur 3 times a year, typically in February, March, July, and October. It provides the NAPO Secretariat and National Plant Protection Organizations, or the NAPO member country, and the Industry Advisor Group an opportunity to provide updates with regards to what their respective organizations are facing. It sets policies, it reviews budget, and it provides strategic direction, strategic decisions, including the yearly work program. And on that, I'll turn it over to Stephanie Dubon.
All right. So next slide. All right. Thank you. So I'm going to talk about, can you hear me okay? Yes. All right, good. So I'm going to talk about how you, those of you watching, can participate in NAPO. So first of all is the work program. So the NAPO work program is approved annually by the Executive Committee. And we typically have about 13 to 18 projects. That's what we have felt is the manageable, comfortable number of projects every year. And so the expert groups do that work. They conduct and develop those projects. And then the AMC and the Secretariat manage the work program and that work. And as you can see here, about 70% of our expert groups have industry participation or membership. Next slide, please. So here I'm going to talk about the membership or composition of each expert group. So you can see here, we have all three member countries as members participating in all the expert groups. So as for government membership, we have subject matter experts appointed by the government or AMC. So we have, they can be from the NPPO, they can be from the customs, they can be from the research branch of the government, and then they also can be from academia, states, province, et cetera. And then we also ask our industry to provide experts as well. So from Canada, that would be Andrew Morris. From the United States, that would be Craig Regelbrugge. We ask them to provide us experts, and then the AMC appoints them to the expert group. Next slide, please. All right, so this is just an example of one expert group. So this was for RSPM 35 revision, and this one is the stone fruit, pome fruit, and grapevines. And so this gives an idea of who was on the group from government and industry. So I'm going to just talk about the USA because that's the one that I know. So if you look, we have Yilmaz, Patrick, and Sheila. They were our NPPO experts. And then we also have Randy and Maher. They were from California, and they represented the state and academia, I believe. And then we look over here at the industry, and we had three U.S. industry representatives and also from Mexico. So this group really had good broad representation from government, industry, academia, states. This was a really excellent expert group that had a lot of input on the development of the draft. Next, please. All right, so what is an example of a NAPO project on the work program? So Stephanie Bloom already talked about regional standards. So right now we already have 41 approved adopted standards, and you can look at those on the NAPO website. And then she also already talked about the phytosanitary alert system. So there's that website that she was talking about. So if you go there and you can sign up to receive those pest alerts. And so right now, this year, we currently have 18 of them already posted, and that's total among the three countries. And we also post the emerging pest alerts. Right now for 2021, there are not any, but you can go ahead and look at those and see what comes out every year. And then Steve already mentioned some of the workshops and symposiums that we've already had. And here's just an example again of the ones from since 2016. Just a snapshot of some ideas of what could be a project. And then science and technology documents. So this is one that just went for consultation this past summer, and it's going to hopefully be adopted in the next month or two. And the expert group is going through all the comments right now. And then we also have a position document, and this one also went through consultation this past summer, and the expert group has already gone through all the comments, and it should be adopted in the next month. Next slide, please. All right, so now I want to talk about the NAPO project lifecycle and how you can be involved in this, because you know it's kind of a big concept of a project and how it becomes kind of this little seed and grows into this adopted project. And really, you have input almost everywhere here. So a project is submitted, someone thinks of an idea and they submit the project, and this can be anybody here on this webinar. And then the AMC ranks the projects and the executive committee approves those projects to get added to the work program. And then we have that expert groups who we talked about just a couple slides ago, they develop that, and anybody here can be on an expert group. If you have the right expertise, you can be on that expert group. And then it goes out for consultation, and consultation is really important. That is when we ask everybody who's a stakeholder to provide comments on the draft. You don't just draft something and then approve it and post it. We really want that feedback to make sure that we have something, a product that will be implemented. So that's why your feedback's very important. And then we take all those comments that come back, and the expert group goes through every single comment, and they have to incorporate it or not. And then they have to give a feedback on why they did or did not incorporate it. And then they finalize the draft, and then they send it to the executive committee, and the executive committee approves it, and the NAPO secretariat posts it on the website. So there's a lot of steps here, but you can provide your input nearly everywhere in the system. So next slide, please. All right, so now I'm going to talk about submitting a project and where you can be involved in the process. And so who can submit one? Pretty much anybody, any stakeholder can submit a project. So typically they've been government, states or provinces, industry, academia, anybody can submit one. So what can be a project? It can be a new RSPM, a revision to an RSPM, a workshop or a symposium idea. And how does somebody come up with the idea? Typically stems from an emerging issue, a new threat, or a good idea. And we say the word project, so just so that it encompasses workshops and symposiums and RSPMs, these different type of documents, but we don't necessarily fund your research project or anything. It needs to be related to a standard or implementing a standard. So just keep that in mind. And how do you submit your project? Well, if you go to the NAPA website, you'll see that there's the project proposal template and there's some instructions. And then you'll want to fill out that form or that template, but you'll also want to work with me in the US or Steve in Canada to fill it out, because I'll talk about in the next slide, there's some certain criteria, some things you need to take into consideration when you fill it out. So it's really important to work with your AMC member when you fill out that form. And so when can you submit a project? So you can submit it anytime, but we strongly encourage you to do it when there's an open call for new proposals. And usually that's every 2 years. And oh, look, there's one coming up soon in November of 2021. So it's going to open around mid-November. And so look out for that. We're going to send out a blast email when that happens. Next slide, please. All right. So as I mentioned earlier, there's a form. And so when you fill out that form, there's some things you have to take into consideration. And we take these into consideration when we rank each project and when we prioritize them. So in the United States, we take all the United States submissions and we look at them closely and we determine how they are linked to the PPQ mission and the PPQ strategic priorities. And then we send the ones that we feel are the best to the NAPO, and then we look at them at the AMC all together with the ones submitted to Canada and Mexico, and we determine how they are aligned with regional strategic priorities. We look at them and determine, is it have harmonization value for North America? Does it focus on pests of concern to member countries? Have you provided the availability of a technical or scientific expert? Is the form complete? Have you provided resources? And this can include, did you provide journal articles? Did you provide any other resources such as this? So this is why it's really important for you to work with me in the US, Steve in Canada, to make sure your form's complete. And don't wait until the last week. Do it at the beginning of the call for projects. Next slide, please. All right, so we want to talk about why industry is key. And Stephanie touched on this when she talked, that NAPO is the only RPPO that has industry input from the beginning of the process all the way through. We have industry on our governance bodies, and also at the IPPC, there's no industry membership on any of the IPPC expert groups or industry on governance bodies at the IPPC level either. So industry is very important to us because we want you at the table. We want you to have buy-in. So we work very closely together with industry and MPPOs. We want you to implement the ISPMs. These are the international standards, develop and implement the regional standards, develop our other products, and share responsibilities as the keepers and protectors of plant resources. Next, please. All right, and then again, just reiterating that industry is vital to NAPO because, you know, industry does also propose projects. You review our draft standards and our documents. You participate in the NAPO events, such as our workshops and symposiums. You ensure the development of relevant, technically and operationally sound products to advance North American harmonization and trade facilitation goals. And we want industry to be our advocates for plant protection in the region. So, next slide, please. All right, so this is the final thing I'm going to talk about, is our annual meeting. So it's a typically it's a 3-day event. It happens in October, sometimes early November, and it rotates among the three hosts, or the three countries rotate hosting it. And we usually have, when we have it face-to-face, it's 120 to 150 participants, and industry makes up about a third to a half. And we have interpretation in two or three languages, so Spanish and English, and in Canada, we'll have a third language in French. So the first 2 days are dedicated to updates, discussions, we have side meetings and networking going on, and then day three is dedicated to a science-based symposium. Now this year, we're going to be having it virtually, as I mentioned. It's going to be November 3rd through 5th, and I'll get into more details in a couple slides, but I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about how it's changing this year. So it's November 3rd through 5th. The United States is hosting. And usually we have 120 to 150 participants. And this year, because we went virtual, we now have, we're nearing 500 participants. And at first we kind of got nervous, but now it's really exciting because NAPL used to just be this small regional event that happened between the three countries. And sometimes we'd have another RPPO visitor. We'd have the IPPC secretariat, someone there come and visit us. And now we have over 30 countries coming and we have five or six RPPOs coming. And it's truly becoming something that was just a small regional event, becoming this global event. And it's becoming really exciting. And our science-based symposium this year, systems approaches. So if that's something you're interested, please come and watch even just the third day if you're not interested in the other activities going on the first 2 days. So please join us for that. Next slide, please. And we always ask for feedback every year. We do a survey and we consistently see that the NAPL annual meeting provides an excellent venue to dialogue with between the regional, the industry, all of the stakeholders to advance the standards, to address emerging plant health issues, and identify opportunities to improve trade within the NAPL region. Next slide. So this is my last slide, and it's again to talk about the annual meeting. So here's the dates, November 3rd through 5th. It's a two-hour sessions each day. So Eastern time, 10 to noon, and then we have a break and meet up again 1 to 3 o'clock. So you can go to the NAPL website and you'll see the agenda and the registration link right there. And then also, if you're unable to attend, we are going to record every single session and post them on the NAPL website the week after the meeting, and they'll be up for a month. So if you're not able to attend, note the agenda, look and see which sessions interest you, and then make a note to go and watch them the week following. So thank you. That's all I have. I'm going to turn it back to Stephanie to transition into the question and answer session. Thank you.
Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us for the webinar today. Myself, as the executive director for NAPL, want to invite you to continue collaborating with NAPL. And you have, if you have not started collaborating with NAPL, we invite you to join us. I feel that your input is extremely valuable. I see the benefit of having diverse points of view from federal government, from state government, from academia, from industry. That makes our products more implementable because they are common sense. They are not up there in the clouds, but they are down facing the reality in plant health that we all face every day. If you need any more information on NAPL, I would suggest you visit our website, www.napl.org. And again, I want to thank you very much for your attention this afternoon. I see that we have a few things on the chat and the question and answer, and we will move to address those questions from the attendees at this time.
Stephanie?
Yes?
Sorry. Steve Cote has something to say.
Steve, please go ahead.
Yes, Stephanie, I just wanted to correct an error I've mentioned when making reference to the NAPL pest alert system. I should have identified that the NAPL pest alert system is there to, for fulfilling our reporting obligation, but in line with ISPM 17 on pest reporting rather than ISPM 13. So apologies for that. I just wanted to make that correction.
Thank you so much, Steve. Greatly appreciate that. Okay, so we have a couple of things coming up on the chat. What I'm going to do is I can try to read them and see if we can answer that question. Okay. Okay, I do not see anything in the chat. Let me look in the question answer. Oh, here we go. Okay, sorry. There is a question and it says RSPM 36, which was the regional standard on seeds, has been superseded by ISPM 38, which is the international standard on seeds. That's true. And the comment goes on to say, RSPM 36 included an appendix of recommended seed health testing methods, which I thought was an important development. What has happened with that appendix? Are there plans to pursue NAPO seed health testing recommendations? And this is a question by Gary Munkhold to all of us as panelists. So I'm going to take the first shot, Gary. Thank you for pointing out the benefits of Regional Standard 36. As Steve was saying, when our regional standards are used to develop international standards, we go ahead and archive our standards. That does not mean that you as a stakeholder cannot see them. You can still see them. They're at the bottom of the regional standard page, and they are marked as archived. So this appendix that you referred to is still there and available for use. It is, like I said, available there for use. Now, does NAPO have plans to pursue NAPO seed health testing recommendations? Well, I would have to say no with a qualification to that no, because as Steph Dubon was saying, we are in the next month or so opening a call for new project proposals. And while I haven't seen a project on NAPO seed health testing recommendations, perhaps you would want to develop one, Gary. And if you do, and you are from the United States or from Canada, then you would work with Steve or with Stephanie, and they would provide you the format in which to submit the project, and that would be considered for the next round of projects for the 2022 work program. Hopefully I have answered your question. I want to see if my fellow panelists want to add anything.
Nothing from my perspective, Stephanie. I think you've covered it all.
Thank you. I see. Rick, did you want to add something from the ASTA seed perspective?
Yes, I would. Thank you very much, Stephanie. First of all, I think a lot has changed since RSPM 35 was developed. And there's been a lot of rapid development and advances in seed health testing in the seed sector, and this focus on molecular seed health testing is a big issue. I would point out that there is a huge NAPO harmonization project going on seed health testing for tomato brown rugose fruit virus. And it's going through an exhaustive ring test among the three NAPO countries. I think 10 laboratories are involved in this process to see which method or methods are going to provide the most consistent results. So ultimately, the three NAPO countries will be able to recognize the test results of each of the other countries to help facilitate harmonization in the region. So I think this is one example where NAPO indeed is involved in seed health testing and providing recommended results. I think we'll learn a lot from this process, but it is very resource intensive, very in-depth. And so it'll serve as a good model for other organizations around the world as well if we are successful at this. So we may have a process to move forward in addition to hopefully resolving some issues with TOBRV, but have a process that we can apply to other seed health testing issues.
Thank you very much, Rick. And I did not mention our pilot project, but you're absolutely correct in bringing that up. We are going to evaluate 5 different diagnostic protocols for, as Rick informed you, the tomato brown rugose fruit virus. And I have to tell you and echo what Rick said, other countries around the world are very interested in what we're doing here in Napo with this ring test for our pilot project and are keeping a close eye on our results. So thank you for that, Rick. Anything to add from Steve or Stephanie? Hopefully we answered your question, Gary. I will move on to other questions and comments that we have received. First, a comment from Paul Newman. Thank you very much, Paul. It says, thank you for providing this introduction to NAPO and its functions and opportunities for engagement. Very informative. Thank you so much, Paul. We worked hard on the presentation and apparently it hit the right notes with you. So thank you for that. We also have a question from an anonymous attendee that says, what is the reason for including industry participation in NAPO? And might I ask one of our industry folks that is a panelist today, if they would like to address that question? Thank you.
This is Rick, again, with the American Seed Trade Association. I think the presentation did include some very good information on the value of industry participation. I would just like to add a couple of other comments. The industry is a very diversified group. And just speaking from the seed industry, for example, Stephanie, you had mentioned that pests don't respect borders. Well, we can also sort of say in many cases, companies don't either, because many companies have operations, for example, in all 3 of the NAPO countries. So in the seed arena, you know, companies are doing seed breeding in Mexico. They bring the seed into the United States for further development and processing. The seed may also be moved to Canada and then back to the US. It's just seed movement comes all over the place throughout the region. And so making sure that we have a harmonized system and a predictable system to move our product among the 3 NAPO countries is very crucial. So also, I think we also need to look at that common ground between the industry and these governments, because I think we all do share that common commitment or that value, and that is nobody wants to move contaminated products around NAPO, the NAPO region, or around the world for that matter. And so by communicating to each other, I think the government can get a better understanding of how the industry manages its pest issues and what technologies and approaches we can bring to the table, as well as the industry understanding better what the issues, needs, and concerns are from these governments. And so but the more we can communicate and cross-fertilize, if you will, knowledge and information, I think the better off we will be. And also, I think the regulatory world is becoming much more complicated. And so we need to all be thinking futuristically, sort of thinking out of the box. I think one example in our industry, again, is seeing if we can find a way to use the systems approach as a phytosanitary measure, where in it, you know, rather than certifying each and in every consignment, maybe we can accredit the companies that produce those consignments and accredit them and manage at that level rather than each individual phytosanitary consignment that goes around. I think we can do a better job of managing overall phytosanitary risk that way, but also more efficiently use regulatory as well as industry resources. So I can think of a lot of reasons for industry participation, but I think I'll stop there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rick. Andrew, did you want to add any comments?
Sure, I think I will. Thanks for that, Stephanie. And thanks for Rick as well for your comments on industry. And I have to agree with everything that's been said. I think having industry engaged in this process, especially early on, helps to ensure that process understands all the tools and options that are currently available for addressing any sort of issues that may come to pass. And certainly engaging industry in that early on allows us to take advantage of those tools where engaging in consultation after most of the work has been undertaken and the decisions have been made is oftentimes less efficient. And in addition to that, it certainly helps with buy-in as well. I mean, industry is very inclined to do everything in their power to prevent movement of pests, and getting them to buy into that early on is very, very effective. And in many cases, our industry partners will help to identify new pest threats that may not be on the radar or other concerns that they have for the protection of their sector. And so I think it's been a very good synergistic relationship over the last several years since industry has been included. And I'm glad that we have the opportunity to contribute to that and to better prevent the movement of pests across borders.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Andrew. I see another comment in our question and answer that says, again, from an anonymous attendee, industry should be included. And yes, I'm glad you agree with that. And they go on to say they are more familiar with their products. So as an example of similar to breeders of dogs who know their breed standards, know the diseases of concern, the genetic disorders, industry closely monitors all activities regarding their products. And that is absolutely true and very useful in the NAPO space. If we develop, for example, a regional standard that nobody in industry understands, the standard will never be implemented. So we want to have that early input that both Rick and Andrew referred to, so that the standard, once it goes through all of its steps that Steph Dubon talked about, and then is approved by our executives, that then it has a seamless implementation both by our member governments and by industry. So you're right on the mark with that industry involvement. I don't see any other questions, so I would say we just, again, thank you very much for attending our webinar today. If this afternoon you think of something else, please send it via my email, and we will get together and try to provide you the best answer possible. So thank you again to the panelists, Steve Côté from CFIA, Steph Dubon from PPQ, and our indispensable colleagues from industry, Rick Dunkel and Andrew Morse. And I also want to thank the NAPO administrator, Eva Sofia Baez, for helping us put this event together. So thank you, everybody, and have a good afternoon.